Hare Krishna. So I just opened up here to see what would be in this book. What is the difficulty? And I opened it up to his sister. It says, she is my sister. Which would Prabhupada would say, even she is my sister, he said to me, you have to sit here because she is my sister. She's a woman. Prabhupada was a sannyasi. He said, even she's my sister, you have to be in the room. He said, I can't be alone, even with my sister. He said, because they will talk. This was in Vrindavan. Huh? So even Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada in Vrindavan, everyone knew Srila Prabhupada. And everyone knew his position. Srila Prabhupada was pure devotee, but still he requested, he demanded. Prabhupada didn't demand many things, but he said, you have to sit here. Even my sister is here. Because this is the nature, the living entity in the material world. Even one's pure devotee, still others will manage to think of some way to criticize. How many people here are on Facebook? Anyone? Okay, my friend on Facebook. So every day I put a little verse, something Prabhupada said on that particular day. What was today? Today Prabhupada says something very wonderful today. It was in a lecture on this day, September 8th. I don't remember what year, maybe 1976. And he said that when you come into the temple, he said, you don't see a picture. He said, these are not pictures you're looking at. This is not a picture of Sadhu, Lord Narsingadev. He said, the acharyas. He says, the personalities are there. But of course, we have to realize it. He said, you shouldn't see picture. You shouldn't think, oh, here's a nice marble deity, the Lord, very beautiful. Picture here of Panchatattva. These personalities are there. And this is the spiritual understanding. He said, but it requires realization. And of course, realization, he says, comes from chanting Hare Krishna, chanting rounds, following the principles, and rendering devotional service. And then gradually, you can understand if you're making advancement in Krishna consciousness, because you start to get some understanding. This was something we know, Guri knows, when a Mekla would come in, into the temple, what did she do every time? Prabhupada has to see the deities. And the more crowded the temple room was, the more disturbed she would become, because back in the day when Prabhupada was here, it was very easy to see Prabhupada sitting on the Vyasasan, because Srila Prabhupada was sitting on the Vyasasan, and he was moving, he was chanting, he was talking. And everybody, we made that aisle for Prabhupada to see the deities. But then some still see like that, just like a Mekala saw like that. Prabhupada's on the Vyasasan, she would say. You have to make space. And she would, even I would become a little sometimes embarrassed to do anything. I would say, it's impossible. A Mekala, this place is packed. What can you do? She wouldn't settle for that. She would herself try to make this thing. So this is Krishna consciousness, and this is realization in Krishna consciousness. And even we don't understand that, if we actually practice on that platform, the understanding will come. It was Garga Muni way back in the beginning. He was 17 years old. He was Brahmananda's younger brother. So early on, people, they were bowing down before Srila Prabhupada. And Garga Muni, he was young. This was 1960s, and 66, 1967. And he said, why should I, he asked Swamiji, why should I bow down? And Prabhupada said, you bow down. He said, then you'll understand. So this is Krishna consciousness. By practicing this formula, Prabhupada said, it's a science. Understanding will come. Realization will come. And as he would always say, you have to taste. You have to taste the pudding. Otherwise, just looking at it, looking at a gulab jamun, you'll never know what it tastes like. You have to taste. So that's the process of devotional service, is you have to dive in. and taste. You have to engage in the process of devotional service. But, you know, what makes us want to do that? And philosophy is there. And Prabhupada, so many books, like he said, I was reading, he said, I'm so encouraged, he said, you distribute these books. He said, because just, you know, just by touching a book, someone makes progress in Krishna consciousness. But that didn't happen, literally, it didn't happen overnight. And I was speaking with Gauri in the car on the way over, and I was saying, and I remember early in the beginning, when as soon as you come into a temple, I don't know so much now, the little phrases, catchwords that were told and given, but, you know, we had many of them back then that you would hear over and over again, and, you know, all the talking is singing, all the walking is dancing. You know, we had an idea of Krishna consciousness, what we wanted to do. We wanted to go back to the spiritual world. Prabhupada so often say Krishna consciousness is common sense. Another one you heard all the time was time, place, and circumstance. Which that was always a difficult one for me, how to do something according to time, place, and circumstance. But one of the really big ones was Krishna consciousness was based on love and trust. And that sounds very good. Everyone, we've all heard this, even before becoming devotee. That's a very common expression. You know, things, a relationship is based on love and trust. And from the very beginning, you'll hear always from devotees that came early on, everything was established because of Srila Prabhupada's love for his followers, his disciples. And then in turn, of course, their love for Srila Prabhupada, just like Garga Muni. Huh? He was, I listened to him, I remember some years ago in Vrindavan, and he was saying, you know, he was a rebellious 17-year-old in the 60s when everyone was rebelling. And another one of the expressions then was, don't trust anyone over 30. So Prabhupada was that like 2.5 times. He was 70. And these were people that were coming at that time, they didn't trust anyone. We're talking love and trust. So who did they trust? They didn't trust anyone over 30. And this was basically what was going on. So here was this Swami from India who was 70 years old, and he attracted these very same people, and they would do whatever he wanted. But because he loved them, because he loved Krishna. That's also the thing. Love, as we know, you know, there's lust and there's love, but love is a very special thing. Love has to come because of our relationship with Krishna. It's like because Srila Prabhupada loved Krishna, he loved everyone. And he had no desire to take anything from anyone. He only wanted to give Krishna consciousness. And in the beginning, Prabhupada never asked anyone to do anything. If you read in Satsrup's books and you read from the different devotees, you'll see that it's all Prabhupada did was serve the devotees. He had them come, he chanted, and he had them come to the temple. He would sit and he would speak and he would chant. He would cook and he would distribute prasadam. He fed them prasadam. And this went on and on and on. And gradually, people started to think, and it took time as well. What can I, Prabhupada, is there something I can do? And as soon as they would say that, Prabhupada's eyes would, you know, became very wide, and he said, yeah, so many things he wanted to do. But he didn't just say, you know, you do this, you know. You're all here now, I just fed you, so, you know, you wash the pots, and you've got to clean the floor, and these things didn't go on. In fact, with me, I say so many times, he would bewilder me by his humility, because he would ring his bell, which, you know, as soon as the bell rang, I was like 5 seconds, you were in the room, you know, 10 seconds, depending on how far away, like upstairs, you'd hear the bell and just run right across and offer obeisances, and he would look at me and he'd say, so can you give me a massage now? And I would become confused because he was asking me, and I'd say, Prabhupada, you don't have to ask me. I'd say, I'm sitting here all day and night waiting to do something. But because of Prabhupada's mood, he was very humble, and when he did that, you would become more attached. You would just love Prabhupada more because you saw how much Prabhupada cared and how much Prabhupada loved us. So from the very beginning, this was always there. And at no point, when someone finally surrenders, is it that you take advantage of that person. Because just like we know Prabhupada is spiritual master, and pure devotee is transparent. So everything we did, he didn't take it for himself. He just passed it on to his spiritual master. And what comes down from Krishna, he also didn't interfere with. This is the key in Krishna consciousness. Like he said in Vrindavan, he said, I'm just the mailman. I just deliver the mail. He said, you may like it, you may not like it. He said, that's your business. He said, but my duty is to deliver the message from his spiritual master. So without changing, without adulterating, without diluting, without adding things, without subtracting things, and so much, so many times Prabhupada would call me into his room, especially when he was in the West, when he was in New Dwarka, places like that where he stayed for a long time, and say, why are they doing this? Why are they doing that? It was the one time. And sometimes we would make our own mistakes because we wanted to try to do things like Prabhupada, or how we saw Prabhupada do things. And there was Shalavati. She was one of the first pujaris in our society. And she was expert, and she was in New Dwarka. And I would often, when I would leave Prabhupada's room, people would always ask questions, and I would say, well, Prabhupada was doing like this, or Prabhupada said this. So she knew that Prabhupada would take chapatis one at a time. Because when I brought in his plate, then I'd run back to the room, make a chapati, bring it in, you offer obeisances, and slide it down on his plate. It's still puffed up. And then you run back and make another one. So just as he's finishing one chapati, you bring him another chapati. So one day she came to me and she said, Sruta Kirti, she said, I've just started to make puris for the deities one at a time. She said, so she was bringing in their plates, the Rajbhog offering, and she'd put it down with one puri on each plate. Then she'd go run back into the kitchen and she'd make another three puris. And she'd run back into the deity's room and she'd put down puris and she'd go back out and make more puris and come back in. And as soon as she said it to me, I thought, it doesn't sound right, you know. And as I would do, I would just go to Prabhupada and I said, Prabhupada, I said, Shalavati, she's bringing puris to the deities one at a time, like I bring you chapatis. And Prabhupada just shook his head. He said, how could she do that? He said, they're eating. He said, you can't disturb them while they're eating. She said, tell her this is nonsense. He said, is this what I've instructed? He would say, this is not how I've instructed. Why do they change? He would say, why do they have to change things? He said, always changing. He said, the Western mentality is always to change. He said, tell her immediately to stop this. She said, you can't. He said, once you bring the plates in, you have to let them eat. He said, you can't be in and out of the room every 2 minutes, he said. And he just would shake his head. You know. And then another time they were making sweets, and they were using, again, as a very Western, especially in America, so much was, everything is always to fine-tune, do it quicker, faster, cheaper, better, easier. So the Mangalartik sweets started, the milk sweets started to turn into these quickie sweets made with dried fruits and nuts and kind of like a lugdu kind of a thing, and with puffed rice in or peanut butter in it. So they just started making different various sweet balls. So we would often get Mahaprasadam downstairs from the deities. So I saw it, of course, and again, I grabbed some of the sweets. And I put them on Prabhupada's plate. because I wanted to see his reaction. And of course I bring it in, and Prabhupada's eating his lunch. And then he says, "What are these sweets?" I said, "Oh, Prabhupada," I said, "they're maha from the deity's plate." And he said, "Who is making these things?" He said, "It's just concoction." He says, "Who is concocting these sweets?" And I said, "Oh, I was just doing it in a temple." And he just said, he said, "Why?" Again, he would say, "Why they have to change?" He said, "I've given you such nice sweets." He said, "Rasgulla, Sandesh, Gulab Jamun." He said, "All wonderful sweets." He said, "Why are they making?" He said, "Tell them to stop this immediately." He said, "To do," he said, "what I've shown." So this is what Prabhupada, his whole life, and of course within ISKCON in the society, he was always showing us how to do things. And from the beginning, what Prabhupada do is take care of his devotees, because they had surrendered to him. And when Prabhupada accepted a disciple, it was a relationship, it was an eternal relationship that was established. And it was the most wonderful thing, because Prabhupada is completely loyal to his followers. And we see that over and over. I was telling the other night stories in Prabhupada's room about Gursundar and about Rishi Kumar, how they had gone away. And Prabhupada would just be so upset to the point of crying and saying, what can I do? What have I done that you've left? Imagine Prabhupada saying such a thing. But he would do anything to see that the devotee was content in doing their devotional service, being in the temple, be peaceful, because they had surrendered their lives. So he took care of them so nicely. And in taking care, you just want to do more. When someone loves you so much, and hopefully that love is being reciprocated, then you just always want to do something. And this is what Prabhupada did. This was his trick, because he loves us. It's such an amazing thing. But and it's from that kind of love, then trust is there. Because you know, whatever the person says, he's saying it because out of love, because he cares. And they want to see you happy. It's all Prabhupada ever wanted. Like he would say, you know, chant Hare Krishna and be happy. I was with him 2.5 years, and then Hari Sari was his personal servant. I saw Prabhupada in Detroit like 3-4 months later. And of course he came right up to me, I offered obeisances, and he looked at me and said, "So everything is all right?" He said, you know, which is genuine. And I said, "Yes." Whenever you looked at Prabhupada, it didn't matter, even if you're bleeding to death. You know, Prabhupada would say, "Is everything all right?" And you'd say, "Yes, Prabhupada," because it was at that moment, because he was right there looking at you. Everything was all right. Nothing else ever mattered. I would see it over and over again. People would travel cross country to sit down and talk to Prabhupada about their problems. You know, then they'd come to the temple, they'd go on the morning walk, and then they'd be sitting at class. And by the time they were in Prabhupada's room, they're thinking, "I don't have any problems. What problems are there?" You see how ridiculous, you know, to ask Prabhupada about some mundane situation you had that's creating difficulty, and everything would just disappear because you were before Prabhupada and he just changed. I said, when I was with Prabhupada, I always felt like I was in a bubble, a protective bubble, you know, because nothing seemed to come in there. Nothing dangerous ever came in. All the flights I was on with Prabhupada, I never had a bumpy flight. You know, everything always seemed to go very nicely. But it was Prabhupada's presence, and it was the most peaceful place to be, was in Prabhupada's room with Prabhupada there. And you can still experience that. Huh? For those of you who go up and chant rounds in Prabhupada's room or sit and read. It's the most wonderful place to be in Prabhupada's association. Because he's Krishna conscious. So you can experience real peace and real happiness. But it all came from Prabhupada's love. And what I read, I was thinking one thing I'd tell, because I saw so many devotees and their intense love for Srila Prabhupada and the desire to serve him, do whatever he wanted. And this this is the society was built on that. From morning till night, from the time we got up to the time we went to bed, we were just engaged in somehow or other trying to help Srila Prabhupada push on his Krishna consciousness movement. And there are so many times when, with me, how Srila Prabhupada went out of his way to help me in my Krishna consciousness. And the one of them was when I was with him. It was after a year, and traveling around with Prabhupada was actually very, very hectic. To travel constantly with Srila Prabhupada and as a servant and secretary. There were so many things to do. Well, anyway, I'm just giving excuses. So one day is in the afternoon, and it was in Los Angeles, and I heard the bell ring, and I was sleeping very soundly in the room in my servant quarters in New Dwarka. And this had been a person who never, ever took a nap, you know, before. Now I was with Prabhupada, and Prabhupada would take a nap in the afternoon, and I was taking a nap in the afternoon because I was tired. So eventually I heard a bell ring. I don't know how long it took, and I was completely just dead to the world, sleeping, but I heard the bell, and I went in, and I offered obeisances, and I was exercising my eyelids, trying to look awake when I sat up, as if he didn't know what was going on. You know, I was so silly, you know, so foolish. I would think if I just appeared awake, he wouldn't know. He wouldn't know that I was sleeping. He wouldn't know my consciousness, which he always knew. Anyway, as before I could even sit up, he was already shouting, you know. But what he said was, he didn't say, first he said, "I've been ringing this bell." He would always, "I've been ringing this bell for hours," you know. Or maybe it was a few minutes or maybe more. But then when I sat up, he looked at me and he said, "Why aren't you chanting your rounds?" And that really, that just frightened me to know. I thought it was such a problem. I never said anything like that. And he asked me why I wasn't chanting my rounds. And of course, as I was saying, anyone, whenever there's an argument, I never know what to say. As soon as someone challenges me on anything, I just lose all my intelligence. I'm not very good in that situation of fighting and confrontation. What to speak of with Srila Prabhupada. And I just looked at him, and I said the most stupid thing. And I said, "Prabhupada," I said, "I'm sitting in my room all day, and I don't have enough to do." So that was my response. Because I'm sitting there with not enough to do, I'm not getting my rounds finished. And Prabhupada looked at me, and he didn't laugh. He didn't say, "That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life." He looked at me, said, "So what are we going to do?" And I was completely absorbed in what Prabhupada, and I said, "I don't know." But it was actually a fact, because I was just sitting there. It's difficult. It's like the more time you have, the more difficult it is to get anything done. You know, they say if you want something done, ask the busiest person, because he's the person that does things. If you ask the person sitting in a corner, you know, that just reads all day to do something, most likely he's going to say, "I'm not finished reading. You know, I have rounds to chant, I have to do this, I have to..." But once someone that's busy does things. So anyway, he didn't ridicule me. He just said, "What are we going to do?" And I said, I don't know. And he said, "All right." He said, "Call Kurandar." Kurandar was at GBC, he was like the GBC, you know, in charge of New Dwarka. And Prabhupada had lots of confidence in Kurandar. And early on, when I became a servant, I remember walking into Prabhupada's garden in New Dwarka, and it was just a step down. You go out the door, and there was one step, and it was a concrete step. And one day we were walking down, and Prabhupada says, "See this step?" Yes. He said, "Kurandar made this step." Like it was really a big thing. Like, and I looked and I said, "You know, Haribol." And he said, "Kurandar can do anything." Like, see, that was his thing. Like, Kurandar made the step. You know, Kurandar arranged for the altars. Kurandar was a GBC. So it was like he was expert at everything. So Prabhupada said, Kurandar made that step. And Prabhupada, that was his step that he could go down. So I called Kurandar. And he was a very serious devotee in Grahastha. So we both went in and we offered obeisances. And Prabhupada's sitting behind his desk and Kurandar's sits up and very serious face. Kurandar. You see pictures of Kurandar, always very serious. And he said, "Yes, Prabhupada." And Prabhupada said, so he said, "Sruta Kirti," he said, "is not getting his rounds done." And Kurandar's looking and he said, and Prabhupada said, "And he says it's because he doesn't have enough to do." And Prabhupada's not laughing. He's just talking, very matter of fact. And then Kurandar's looking, and he goes, and he said, "So we have to find some engagement for Shruta Kirti so we can get his rounds finished." I'm not seeing any of this as being funny at the time, you know, but it was really funny when you think about it, how ridiculous this whole thing was. And then Kurandar's going, he's looking, and he starts thinking, you know, Shruta Kirti looking. And Prabhupada said, "I have an idea." So we're all, "Yes, Prabhupada." He said, "Well," he said, and he's sitting behind his desk and his dictaphone, his Ur dictaphones machine's there. And he said, every morning, he said, "I'm translating here, Srimad Bhagavatam." He said, and then we give the tape, they transcribe. He said, "So," he said, he had another sitting room. Prabhupada had two sitting rooms in New Dwarka. One he used to do bhajans in, but he never sat there. But it was a complete sitting room with his table, small table. And he said, "So I have another sitting room." He said, "So can you get another dictaphone machine?" Kurandar goes, "Yes, Prabhupada." He said, "So," he said, he looks at me and he said, "Shruta Kirti," he said, "do you know how to type?" I said, "Yes, Prabhupada." He said, "So," he said, "you get a dictaphone machine," he said, "and you put it in that room." And he said, "I'll begin translating Chaitanya Charitamrita in that room, on that dictaphone machine." And then he looks at me and he said, "In Shruta Kirti," he said, "in the morning you can come and take that tape and you can transcribe." And he said, "Is that all right?" I would always say, "Is that all right?" And I said, "Yes, Prabhupada, that's wonderful." I was like so excited. I said, "Yes." He said, "So then you can transcribe the tape," he said, "and you'll have some service," he said, "and then you'll get your 16 rounds done, right?" And I said, "Yes, Prabhupada." He said, "Okay." He said, "So is that all right?" And we're, "Yes, Prabhupada." He said, "All right." And then offered obeisances and left. So that next morning I get up and, you know, put Prabhupada's tilak, his chandan on, open his mirror, get everything ready. Prabhupada, you know, gets clean, puts on his tilak, says Gayatri. We go out on the morning walk, and I'm like chanting. Like, we were on a walk every day for an hour and a half to 2 hours, so there was time to chant. And I'm chanting away. I'm like very excited. You know. I'd gone into the room. Prabhupada did some transcribing, Chaitanya Charitamrita. I put it in the servants' quarters, and I had my typewriter. Everything was ready. So I chanted all my rounds, then we get back and have class, and have breakfast, and I do the transcribing, and I have my rounds done, and I did transcribing. It was, you know, 11 o'clock in the morning. Now I chanted all my rounds and did transcribing of Prabhupada's tape. So then the next morning, there was no tape in there. The next morning, there was no tape in there. And that was it. He never put another tape in. Never. But I was chanting my rounds again every day because Prabhupada loved me. That was all, because he cared. And he was running this entire society, but he took the time to deal with this very foolish young boy who wasn't chanting because he was in Maya, and gave him the most silly reason in the world that he had nothing but time, so he couldn't chant rounds. And Prabhupada accepted that. He accepted that answer, and he never became sarcastic. He never ridiculed me. He never made fun of me. He tried to solve my problem, because that was the problem I gave him. Whatever I would have said, if I said I had too much work to do, he would have said, he would have gotten me an assistant so I could chant my rounds. But I said one thing, and he just dealt with that. And he helped me, because he cared, because Prabhupada cares for everyone. Pure devotee cares for every living entity. But especially one engaged in devotional service, he takes special care of. And because I was with him, I was his personal responsibility. And I saw that in Prabhupada's entourage. He took care of all of us so nicely. He was our temple president. He was our treasurer. He was our temple commander. He was everything. But we were like a little traveling party. And because we were in that party, he took care of, he made sure that we ate properly. He made sure that we had winter clothing when we went from one hot place to another place. And if we didn't have it, he would give us his own. You know, he would, so many times I went into his room and he would give me blankets and chudders and sweaters and jumpers and socks, even his socks he was giving to us. Everything to make sure that we were comfortable. In India, he would, because he knew I was sick in India, he would say, so did you getting cow's milk? He would say, you know, are you getting cow's milk? And then he said, are you having your porridge? Because I told him I liked porridge. So he wanted to make sure that I had porridge while I was in India with cow's milk and that I was healthy. But this was Prabhupada. It wasn't, he was doing all these things, but personally he was taking care of everyone. And if you were, happened to be fortunate enough that you were near him personally, you would see how much he loved you. And it was inconceivable to understand that Prabhupada cared so much. I said my situation, and I think I was very fortunate. Prabhupada was my father, literally. When my father died, I was 3, and I had no father figure in my life for 20 years. And then I went to a temple, and then shortly after, Prabhupada was there. So he was my father, and he was my spiritual father. He was also my material father. He was also like my mother in so many ways. He was taking such nice care. But this is what Krishna consciousness is all about, and especially within the devotee community. It's to care for each other. Like it says, when you come in, you see Srila Prabhupada there. You see Srila Prabhupada, the Panchatattva is there. These are personalities are present for us by Srila Prabhupada's mercy. So we're very fortunate. But also, these are all the associates of Srila Prabhupada, his followers. So if we're developing this love, it has to extend to everyone. And it's not a mundane love. It's not on a bodily platform. It's on a transcendental platform. It means you just want to serve all of these devotees, all of these personalities. We want to serve them in some way or another. And sometimes that service can take the position of being in management, being a leader. But also you become the greatest servant. As Prabhupada said, he was simply the servant of everyone. So in every position, Prabhupada said, we call one another Prabhu. And Prabhu Master means you see everyone as Prabhu. So if each and every one of us do that, then it becomes very sweet within the temple, within the society, to serve together and to develop Krishna consciousness together. But we have some time left. I'll open it up to any questions or comments at this time, anyone has? And if not, I can tell you another story about love. Anyone have any questions? Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokul Ananda. And you have to understand how fortunate you are. You're here in this temple. These are the only deities that Prabhupada circumambulated three times. Twice he did it. He did it at the Delhi Pandal. He danced around them. Danced, jumping up. And he did it when he installed them on Janmashtami Day. You have pictures of that, huh, Prabhupada? And then again, Prabhupada danced. Prabhupada has a very special relationship with Radha Gokulananda, Shishi Radha Gokulananda. He loved to dance before them and to circumambulate them. No question? Yes, Prabhu. Yes, I do. It was actually, I put on my Facebook yesterday. Yesterday was my 38th anniversary becoming Prabhupada's servant. I became a servant on September 7th, 1972, at the end of the Janmashtami festival in New Vrindavan. And we went to Pittsburgh after leaving New Vrindavan in the morning, like 6 o'clock in the morning. And his servant was already in Los Angeles when Prabhupada came to New Vrindavan. He had no servant. It was the night before he left. I was informed. Kirtananda said, "So do you want to be Prabhupada's servant?" And of course I said, "Yes." The next morning I was introduced to Prabhupada, who I had been in the garden several times in New Dwarka, so I knew him, I met him, I read Krishna book to him over a week, 1 week period. But everything was very different now when I went in the room and Kirtananda introduced me. Then we went to Pittsburgh. And that's the only instruction I knew, is when Prabhupada rings the bell, the servant goes in the room. You know, the secretary doesn't go in, nobody else. The servant goes in and sees to see what he wants. And there's nothing else. You don't get taught anything, how to be Prabhupada's servant. There's no rule book, no guidelines, no person to help you for a week or two in a transition, you know, like would happen in most situations. You just, bam, you're there. And Prabhupada was in his room in Pittsburgh, and I was petrified being his servant, even though I'd been around him and I felt a little comfortable in some ways, but now I had to take care of him. I had to massage him. I had to cook for him. And everything was, you know, very scary, you know, to do for Prabhupada, Krishna's pure devotee. So I was in what was Prabhupada's bedroom, because it was just a small place. So he was in the sitting room and I was behind the door in the bedroom. And I was going through his bags, just trying to learn what clothing he had. And that cooker was in there, you know, I had no idea how to use that, but I saw this big brass shiny thing, it's at Jamuna's house now in Saranagati. I saw it the other day. I was there 2 weeks ago, and that was nice. So I'm going through his things, and the bell rings. So right away, that was it. You know, that was my moment. And I ran into the room, offered obeisances, and sat up. And again, my heart's pounding, you know, I'm in anxiety, I have no idea what it's going to say. And I just looked at him, and I said, "Yes, Prabhupada?" He said, nothing. He said, "I just wanted to see how fast you were." And he started laughing. And as soon as he did it, all my anxiety just disappeared. And the first time he rang the bell, that's what he did, is he just dispelled all my fears, all my anxieties, and I got to see the Prabhupada that I had become attached to, the one that laughed, the one with the sense. This is what first thing I was attracted to in Prabhupada, was seeing him laugh. And that's what I wanted to see all the time, was Prabhupada laugh. I would make it, you know, I would do some very peculiar things sometimes, or say things to see Prabhupada, to try to get him to laugh. And he always responded very favorably. Prabhupada was very kind. And he loved to laugh, Prabhupada said. He loved laughing. And he just laughed and said, "I just see how fast you were. And then I just sat and I said, anything else? He said, no, that's all. And then I'm sitting there and I said, you know, should I go now? And he said, yes, you can go. So that was it. He didn't want anything. He just wanted to see how fast I was. But he just wanted to, and that's what he did. He just completely took away all anxiety just like that in a moment. And then over the next few days, he did other things that he just made it so easy. And he made me feel so comfortable and he made me feel loved. You know, it was the most incredible thing. You know, it was the next day. He called me in the room in the afternoon. Now we're in Dallas. And the same thing, he rang his bell. I ran in and I sat right beside him. Like, you know, kneeled beside him. I offered a basin. Says I didn't go around the front. I was beside him. And you know, I was from New Vrindavan under Kirtanananda. And he looked at me and he said, Srutakirti. He said, your name is too long. He said, I'm going to call you Sruto. And I said, okay. He never called me Sruto again. But he just did it, and it was just delightful, you know. And I'm thinking Srutakirti is certainly not the longest name in our society, but, you know, he said it was too long. But then he always called me Srutakirti. But that's what he said, you know. And he laughed, and I laughed. And then he looked at me very seriously, and he said, He said, do you take a nap after lunch? And I got, you know, and I thought he was like questioning what I was doing, you know. I was like, and I said, oh no, Prabhupada. You know, I was from New Vrindavan, you know. We took naps at night, you know. That was a nap. You got like 5 hours if you were lucky, you know. And, you know, we were trained, one of Kirtanananda's sayings was, we don't read Bhagavad Gita, we live Bhagavad Gita. So there was no reading time because we didn't have to, because we had already reached the conclusion of Bhagavad Gita. So we didn't have to read. We had morning class and evening class, but outside of that, you know, you were on a farm and you worked. So that was how I was brought up, you know. We slept during class and during japa. You know, but otherwise we were wide awake. So I said, no, Prabhupada, you know. And then he looked at me with this humility, and he said, I'm an old man. He said, and when you're old, he said, you can't sleep so much at any one time. He said, so I'll take a nap after lunch sometime. So he was explaining to me why he takes a nap. And I was a servant for 2 days. I'm 20 years old, and I'm looking at him, at this person, and I'm thinking, who is he? You know, who, like, no one deals with you like that in any temple anywhere. You know, you don't have an authority coming up to explaining to you his activities. What to speak of Prabhupada, your spiritual master of the whole universe, pure devotee of Krishna, and he's explaining to you why he's taking a nap. And I thought, who is he? You know, but then again, you just like take another big leap in love and in trust, is that you could put your life in this person's hands. You know, I can give him my life. I don't have to worry. He's never going to do anything to hurt me. So this is Krishna consciousness. And these Srila Prabhupada exhibited these qualities. But these are qualities we're supposed to develop. That's what the realization is. If you want to see Prabhupada sitting there, if you want to see Krishna in his form. Well, this is all part of it, is to develop devotional qualities. It's a practice. And we can understand it, we can read it in books, but when, like they say, a picture's worth a thousand words, when you have that person who exemplifies everything of who a devotee is, what a devotee is supposed to be, and you can just take that, imbibe it, and practice it, you can make advancement in Krishna consciousness and really understand what it means, to love one another, to serve within Srila Prabhupada's society. Because it's what he did. He was always serving us. You know, he was serving us. He was trying to help us become Krishna conscious. So this is our duty as devotees. This is what we're supposed to learn. This is what we should be doing ourselves. Then it's very pleasant. Krishna consciousness is a very wonderful thing. an association with devotees is a very wonderful opportunity, but it has to be proper association. And this is, you know, Prabhupada, by his example, he always, I would just, you know, he would just make you think, like, this is just amazing. Imagine saying that to you, you know. But I found it's just so endearing, you know. And so he took a half hour nap or something after lunch, and he took 3 or 4 hours at night. That's what he was doing. And yet he's telling me about his nap and why he's taking a nap. 6 months later, I was taking a nap every day. Because, you know, you went to bed late at night. You'd be massaging Prabhupada late at night, then you'd be up early in the morning. So, and traveling, so your naps became something I was very accustomed to. I have a couple more minutes. Glory. Well, I thought I did, yes. He didn't think I did, but I thought I did. Yeah. You mean after I was with him or the process of leaving him? It was very, when I, I found it very difficult after leaving him because, as we often do, I compared everyone to him, especially in leadership, because at the time, of course, I 2 years later, I became temple president in Hawaii. But in the meantime, I often had difficulties with authorities because I didn't see them following Srila Prabhupada's method, you know. And it usually it came in the form of they weren't very nice to the devotees in the temple, and it was often seemed more like military, like people were just being told to do things, and I you know. And I was so used to Prabhupada being so gentle with me. Although his disciples would come in, and the leaders, and Prabhupada would be very forceful with them, saying, do like this, do like... But he dealt with everyone according to their needs, according to how they responded, you know, what worked, what helped them, what encouraged them in their devotional service. So with me, he always knew how to encourage me, and it was his gentle, kind nature that made me want to just do everything for him. So I, in fact, wrote him a letter, and I was complaining. I was complaining about the temple president in Hawaii because, I thought, you know, I got a line with Prabhupada, and this is obviously, and I said he mistreats the devotees, and that was basically what I said, you know. And I got a letter back from Prabhupada, and he said there's some difficulty. He said you're having there. He said so our Ambarish, he's opening a restaurant in Boston, and he needs some help. He said so why don't you go to Boston and help Ambarish open the restaurant? So actually, Prabhupada told me to leave the temple because I was not happy with the authority, and that's what I did. I packed my bags and I went to Boston, and it was, you know, Krishna's mercy. I got to know Ambarish, you know, that's when we became friends, Ambarish and I, and we've been, you know, ever since we've been very close. But Prabhupada sent me to Boston, and I was there for 6 months, and the restaurant never manifested. We never even bought a property. It just couldn't seem to happen. And then I had been in Hawaii now for a few years and traveling with Prabhupada a few years before that. And now it was November, and I remember my friend and I, we were chanting japa walking up and down the street, and one of those bank signs was blinking the time and the temperature. And we saw the temperature, and in Celsius it was down to like, you know, 2 degrees, and we like looked at one another and we were like, what are we doing here in this place? You know, we were freezing, you know. And you know, we all talked together with Ambarish, and we decided, you know, it wasn't happening, and we went back to Hawaii. And I went back because I got a call from the GBC, it was Guru Kripa, and asked me if I wanted to be temple president in Hawaii. So he kicked out the person who I was complaining about, but it happened like a year later. But it did happen, and it, you know, it was going to happen. And so then I wound up going back to Hawaii, and I became temple president there. So that was interesting. But yeah, Prabhupada sent me away. So I had, and as I moved on, of course, myself, you know, that's always, you don't see yourself. It's easy to see everyone else with your eyes. It's very difficult to see yourself. So, you know, I always looked at everyone else and seeing how they were, you know, doing things. And I, you know, looked for a situation I was content, you know. But it was difficult being with Prabhupada after leaving him. I was finding my own space and what to do. Yeah, that point was there, yeah. You want to hear that, huh? Well, I was married. Yeah. A severance pay? Yeah. Redundancy, I think. A package. A golden parachute. Not at that time, he didn't. Well, I mean, while I was with him, he gave me money. When he called me in New Dwarka, and I had my child who was now like 6 months old, and I was traveling with Prabhupada at that time. Prabhupada didn't make any distinctions for anyone. It didn't matter how old you were or what cloth you had on, you know, if you were brahmachari, sannyasi, grah. You were a Prabhupada, you were with Prabhupada, and he didn't, you know, if it was a grahasta or whatever, he just, you know, the wife and children should be, they would be in L.A., that's where they always wound up, was in L.A. taken care of, and he just knew you had, you know, with me, I can tell you with me, I was in Hawaii, my wife and child were living there, and I had never even been with them, really, just for a few months, and I wanted to be, I was attached, and I wanted to be with my family, and I had been with Prabhupada a long time, and I found it was becoming increasingly difficult because of that, you know, because my mind was in other places. And it was the hardest thing to do. And I went into his room, and of course, you know, instead of just being honest with him, I took a different route, and I told him I wanted to preach. I felt a need to preach, and he just looked at me with the most compassionate look, and he said, my preaching's not good enough. But I guess I was at the end of my time, and I just said, So then I couldn't use that excuse, and Prabhupada would do that. He would cut through all the BS, you know. He would just, like, to get what's real, you know. And then he said, I said, Prabhupada, I just want to stay in Hawaii with my family and do service here. And then he looked at me again, and he said, I don't like to change my servants. Imagine. That's why I don't ever tell this story. And that was it. He didn't want me to go, you know, and it didn't matter, brahmachari, grahasta, whatever. I was, you know, Prabhupada was doing everything. He needed someone with him to assist, you know, so that he said that, and I didn't know what to say. And, you know, but again, this was Prabhupada's compassion and mercy and love. He didn't say, I want you to stay, you know, or stay another 6 months, you know, stay a month. Because you had your choice, and that's Krishna consciousness. There's always a choice. It's because it's based on love, not based on anything else. There's no, the contract is one of love. It's not, nothing else is in there. You can't be forced by, if you're forced, then it's finished. So instead of me making an offense, he gave me the opportunity to do it without making any demands. And this is the art in Krishna consciousness, is to know when you can demand something from someone, or when you encourage someone, giving him a choice, like he would do with his, like we know the stories, like with Tamal Krishna saying, go to China, you know, and Tamal's like, I don't want to go to China, you know, and it's, well, you can go to, like he could deal with Tamal Krishna very differently than how he dealt with me, because Tamal was, he was strong, he was heavy, you know, but like I wasn't like that. I would just crumble if Prabhupada talked to me like he talked to other devotees. I'd just go back to my room and cry, you know. So everyone's an individual, and we have to know how to deal with individuals, not just that we have this, someone's given us this program, you know, this is the program, now make sure everybody does it. You know, it's not impersonal. Everything's personal, and everything's based on love, so everything's voluntary. So how to get people to do things voluntarily, that's, Prabhupada would say, that requires a little intelligence, but it requires really love. It requires that we're Krishna conscious, and we actually do care. We have to care, and if we don't, then we've got to go back and figure out what is it. As Prabhupada would say, what am I doing wrong that I'm not progressing in Krishna consciousness? So we have to see, because with chanting and following the principles and engaging in devotional service, gradually, you know, you should get some heart should begin to open up. Vishwambar Prabhu, Hare Krishna. He was... Oh. Yeah, there was no... Well, I was saying, when I was in New Dwarka, and Prabhupada called me in the room, and he said, go get Nanda Kumar, who was living across the street in the apartments as a grahastha householder. And so I went and got Nanda Kumar, and he said, what's Prabhupada want? He was Prabhupada's servant just before me. And I said, I don't know, he just told me to get you, because when you were with Prabhupada and he called for you, you always want to know why. You know, if you weren't, you would think it was wonderful. You were just getting to see Prabhupada. But when you knew Prabhupada and you heard that he had called for you, then you would become afraid, because you think, why is he calling me? You know, because you figure something was wrong. So that's what Nanda Kumar said. Why does he want to see me? And I'm there, I don't know. You know, but, so like you'd walk back and you'd be like this, like, well, you know, what have I done? You know. So we both went back, and then Prabhupada said to me, he said, go get my white bag. So I went in his Elmira and I got his white bag. You know, that was his briefcase. Had everything, you know, all the important things in it. So we're sitting there. Prabhupada went in and he took out two $50 bills. And he hands one to me. And he goes, this is for your son. You know, my son, who was, you know, 6 months old, that I had never seen yet. I hadn't seen him. I was with Prabhupada the whole time when she delivered, had the baby in New Dwarka. He said, now we're back in New Dwarka. He said, this is for your son, you know, to get him. So I learned very, very early, and I was very happy. I didn't refuse gifts from Prabhupada. In fact, I was probably too enthusiastic to receive things from Prabhupada. But I just, you know, it's what Prabhupada liked to do, was reciprocation. It's what we do in Krishna consciousness. And of course, it was wonderful to get prasadam from Prabhupada in any form. So I took it and I offered my obeisances, said, thank you, Prabhupada. Then he took another and he went to Nanda Kumar and he goes, this is for your son. And Nanda Kumar goes, Prabhupada, I can't take that from you. And now I'm thinking, oh my God, you know. And Prabhupada looks at him, he said, it's not for you, it's for your son. And Nanda Kumar goes, yes, Prabhupada, and he took it. So like Prabhupada always knew exactly, always knew what to do, always knew what to say. That was the one I put on yesterday, was one of Prabhupada's godbrothers. You don't see the letter, but you know, he obviously asked Prabhupada for help with his temple, if he could send some money. And Prabhupada's letter, it was so funny, because he's talking to Haribol. He's talking and he says, yes, we are distributing every month $1 million worth of books. He said, but all the money is coming from Malechas and Yavanas. He said, so how can I give you this money? It's tainted. He said, and obviously you're a Brahmin. He said, so you can't accept money from Malechas. So Prabhupada just like, and then he said, if you like, he said, I can send my men over to manage your temple. So not only doesn't he give him the money, then he tells him he'll take over his temple because he's having difficulty managing it. But he said, how can you possibly take money from Malechas since you're a Brahmin, you know? So it was like so funny when you read the letter, you just see Prabhupada's sense of humor, you know, and how he can do everything. But, yeah, so Nanda Kumar took the money. But, yeah, there was, Prabhupada would give different things, but, there was never salaries or anything. Sometimes he'd give you a little something. If, you know, when my son was born, he sent, you know, one of the local Mayapuris to Navadweep, and he got them bangles, silver bangles and ankle bells for my son as a gift. There's a picture of him. Big fat, on Facebook with those bangles and yeah, ankle bells. I doubt it. Yeah, it's 8:45. I don't know how long you want. Should we stop here? Shruti, have you stop here? Yeah. I'll stop here. Hare Krishna, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.